Hi, this is Amy Impellizzeri, host of Tall Poppy Writers Presents. I Know How This Book Ends, where we take a deep dive into the stories behind the stories of the biggest books out this year. Today, I have the honor of speaking with debut author Tricia Mary Blanchett, who writes under the name T.M. Blanchett, and her debut novel, Herrick's End, is out now. I am so excited. Welcome, Tricia.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me. This is fun.
So a couple of things, audience, that you need to know about Tricia is that she is a former reporter, editor, and award-winning humor columnist. She is a fellow Tall Poppy writer sister. She founded the nonprofit organization Operation Delta Dog. We're going to talk about that. She's also a producer at A Mighty Blaze. You guys all know about that, but in case you don't, talk about that as well. And she's a graduate of the S.I. Newhouse School of Public Communications at Syracuse University and the University of Massachusetts at Amherst. So Tricia, I loved this book. It is so unusual. It's so exciting. We're going to talk about this. I would like to talk a little bit first about how you found yourself transitioning from reporter, editor to YA novelist. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. It's actually not really a transition. It's just something that took forever to happen because I have been writing novels probably since I could write. My whole life I've been writing them. But when career time came, it didn't seem like a career. You know, it didn't seem like something I could do to earn money.
Yeah,
so I went to journalism school. So I went to journalism school and tried to quit writing novels. I tried my best. Did the journalism thing, but it really wasn't for me. And then I did a lot of other kind of weirdo jobs, one of which inspired Herrick's End. And then I just kept trying and I got really serious. And as the years went by, they just got better and better because, as you know, the early novels are trash. They are awful.
Right. Well,
and they just kept getting better.
What I understand is that even though this is your first novel, as is often the case, this is not really your first novel you've ever written, I'm sure.
Right. Not even close. It's probably my 9th or 10th, I think. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. But this book, so – let's talk a little bit. Let's give a little bit of the spoiler-free elevator pitch of this book. So it starts with a really interesting prologue that's actually in 1700 Salem, colonial Massachusetts, right? In the time of the Salem witch trials.
Right.
And so it has a prologue that's set there. And then fast forward quickly to present day Massachusetts, where we have a really really lovable protagonist who's a shy kid in Boston who is really struggling. He's in a weight loss group and he's struggling with his weight. He's struggling with his emotions. He's lost his mother. And now a friend of his has gone missing. And so he embarks on what becomes a pretty fantastical adventure, literally underground. And let's talk. You referenced some of your past job history, and one of them in particular that you said influenced the writing of this novel in particular.
Yes.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So when I lived in Connecticut, I worked at a domestic violence center for victims of domestic violence and sexual assault. And we mostly helped women and children sort of escape abusive situations.
Yeah.
And for some people that just involved therapy or, you know, all kinds of help of that sort. But other people wanted to relocate. They needed to escape an abuser.
Yeah.
And it's really not just a fictional thing. People really do need to relocate, change their names, go underground. And we helped with that when needed. And it was a very difficult thing to do, obviously, as you can imagine, to work in this situation. And I just began to notice a very strange phenomenon, which was that the victims were giving up everything.
Yes.
They were, they had nothing. They left their jobs, their family, sometimes their pets, sometimes their children, if it was a really extreme situation. And the abusers gave up nothing.
Right.
They just basically moved on to the next victim.
Right.
So,
this is so poignant.
One day I just started, you know, thinking, what if there was a way for the victim to get a little revenge? Or if what if they didn't have to leave their situation? What if it was the abuser who had to leave in a sort of supernatural way?
Right.
And it just, my imagination just sort of ran away with me. And that's how Herrick's End began. The story idea, the seed of it began there. Like, what if things could be different? And is that good or is that bad?
Yeah. And so there's there's a gray area. There's a morality question here, many. And there's also, of course, a cast of really fascinating characters. It is, it's being marketed as YA fantasy. Although I suspect that it's, somewhat genre bending. And I think that a lot of people are going to, I think actually one of my favorite heroes, literary heroes, Caroline Levitt, wrote a really beautiful blurb that I thought really captured what's happening here. Because she says, I get obsessed with a novel that grows its genre with surprise after original surprise. And that's all in Blanchett's astonishing YA fantasy debut. And I thought, oh yeah, that is spot on. When you started writing it, did you intend for it to be YA? How did that journey happen?
No, absolutely not. And I was sort of surprised when it was marketed that way. I had this image in my head of this kid and I couldn't get it out of my mind. He was at like a support group meeting of some kind and he was upset about something that had nothing to do with the meeting. And you know how it is when you're a writer and you get these little seeds going and I couldn't get rid of it. I wanted to know, what is this kid upset about? So then I just thought, oh, somebody's missing. Somebody that he cares about is missing. And I sort of combined that with this other idea I had for this weird revenge thing. And that's why he ended up being sort of a younger character. I had never written a male protagonist, and I had never written anyone that was not an adult before. So it was
a
little scary and new. Yeah. And I thought,
a double challenge.
Yeah. So it was just sort of a challenge I took on, and I'm like, it'll probably be awful, but let's just do it. It sounds like fun.
Well, it's certainly not awful. And of course, it's also book one of the Neith trilogy.
Yes.
So, and so is the trilogy intended to be, are the characters going to remain in the trilogy? Tell me a little bit about how the trilogy is intended to be structured.
Yep. So you will see everyone again. Everyone comes back.
That's exciting news.
It does seem like a relatively happy ending at the end of book one, but there's a little teaser in the epilogue that, trouble's coming.
So, yes.
Yeah. He didn't quite wrap things up the way he thought he did. We'll just say that.
Yeah. Well, and I love that too. So, and because this is called I Know How This Book Ends, we always talk spoiler free about how this book ends. But what I really want to know is, because you just gave us a little hint about, how the book ends in terms of, a segue into book two. But did you always know how the trilogy was going to end? That's what I really want to know.
Yes.
Okay, yes. So you know sitting now how the trilogy is going to end.
Yes, I've written book two and I've outlined book three. And I have sort of opinions on breaking the cycle of abuse and violence. And I just wanted to kind of work that into the end to just sort of say, maybe there is a way we can end the cycle.
Oh, okay. Well, that's really compelling and beautiful. And now everybody's going to be really clamoring because I know book two is coming out next spring, and then is book three scheduled for the spring of 2024?
I believe so. They haven't told me yet, but I assume that's what they'll do. Yeah.
Okay. And so why a trilogy? When did that form in the process? Right from the beginning? Did you always intend this to be a series, or did that evolve as you wrote Ollie's story?
Yeah, it just seemed like a really big story. And I wanted like three different adventures with a central line running through it of the main mystery. What is going on here with this weird place and how did it start? And you won't get all the answers in book one, but you'll get some.
Yeah.
But so, well,
and tell me a little bit about the world building that you engaged in here. How did that, tell me a little bit about how that process went. What's your inspiration for that?
Oh, I just love magic stories. I love witch stories. I always wrote sort of real world stories like crime, and I used to try to write spy novel, you know, you name it. I've written all kinds of weird things. But the minute I opened myself up to like supernatural elements, it was like unlocking a door for me. I was like, wow, anything, absolutely anything is possible. Yeah. I no longer have to worry about the laws of physics or anything like that. And it just made it so much more fun for me. And my one I wrote right before this had to do with witches, and I just loved that. I thought it was so much fun. So I said, oh, let me incorporate that again in a different way here. So you've got and all so those magical elements.
It's too soon to know maybe, but will you stay in this lane? Will you stay in this fantasy lane, do you think?
I think so, because what really compels me for some reason is it's our world. It looks and smells and sounds like our world, but there's these secret magical elements hiding under the surface that regular people can't see. So that seems to be what I like to write the best. And that's what my previous novels were. And that's what this one is. And I've got one started actually already for a new trilogy idea that's similar.
Oh, that's exciting.
Having now, to do why, with ghosts.
Why Boston? It's set in Boston. I know you said you referenced that it was inspired by work that you did in Connecticut. So, and I know you have New England ties. Do you live in Boston currently?
I live in the Boston area. Yes. Sort of born and raised and just a Boston girl. So it just seemed natural. And there's so much history here with all kinds of weird things, great molasses flood and all kinds of strange things.
Yeah. And of course the Salem witch history is really an interesting one too. So that weaving that is really interesting.
Yep. Everybody loves the witch history around here, except the people of Salem. They're not so crazy about it, I think. Right. All the tourists.
That makes sense. So let's talk a little bit about your work with A Mighty Blaze. I am, it's completely in awe, having had a book that released literally, my last book released literally on the eve of the pandemic, the first week of March 2020. And one of the first people who generously reached out and said, you know, I want to help promote your book was Caroline Levitt. She did, you know, like a series of initial YouTube videos that then became A Mighty Blaze. So I am familiar with the incredible, generous, you know, project that is. But talk a little bit about your involvement with A Mighty Blaze.
So it was founded by Jenna Blum and Caroline Levitt. I knew Jenna because I was in her writing workshop at Grub Street in Boston.
Yes, of course.
And our workshop went virtual right then in March.
Right, right.
And we would all just talk about it. And then she mentioned that she and Caroline were starting this thing, and could I help with the spreadsheets because they were starting to try to schedule things. And they're both allergic to spreadsheets and scheduling.
Well, so. I can imagine that was quite a cumbersome task.
So a bunch of us jumped in to help. There was maybe, I don't know, 10 of us at the very, very beginning.
Oh, wow.
And we would just basically schedule Caroline and Jenna's interviews. And then more people started to say, hey, I'll do interviews and I'll do a show. And then it just kept growing and growing and growing. And I took on several, we all change roles constantly as new people came on board.
Yeah.
And I ended up sort of pitching the podcast idea.
Talk about the podcast.
Great interviews. I mean, we do like 8 or 9 or 10 amazing interviews every single week.
Yeah.
And we have from the start, and they live on YouTube. You can watch them anytime, but I know a lot of us while we're doing housework or walking the dog, we like to listen to things like podcasts.
Right, right.
So I said, let's just turn some of these great interviews into podcasts. So that's all I do. I don't do the interviews. I just sort of repurpose them I introduce the interview and then wrap it up at the end. Yeah.
That's incredible.
It's a lot of fun.
So how has that affected or impacted your getting ready to launch a novel in the world? What are the lessons you've learned from the writers that have been interviewed on A Mighty Blaze?
Oh, I've been watching them all try to launch during a pandemic. And oh my gosh, it is just – It's so difficult. I have such sympathy for everybody. You know, you worked, you know what, you know how it was. You worked years and years and years. And then to have that happen, I mean, not like we're so, we're any worse off than anyone else during the pandemic, but
right.
It's just a challenge. I feel very blessed that things have opened up a bit in time for my release, which makes it a little easier. I get to do some in-person events, but I've also seen just the value of the virtual interviews and podcasts and social media postings and how it really can help, even if you can't do the in-person things, because I can't travel much. I have two kids at home and I'm not really going anywhere. So it's helped for me to see how to take advantage of all those virtual opportunities.
Well, and people have really embraced that. And that's been a really incredible discovery and silver lining of this time, because while it has been challenging for authors, I do always say, I feel like for readers, it's been an incredible experience because they have unprecedented access to their favorite writers. And you, you know, as a writer and a fan, I am so excited when I have an opportunity to see a writer who wasn't going to, I live on the East Coast, what, you know, maybe wasn't going to be on the East Coast, maybe wasn't going to be in Pennsylvania, maybe wasn't going to be anywhere, you know, to an event that I could steal away to. So yeah, I think that has been, I think that is something that hopefully will continue on and be part of the regular, you know, book launch world. But we all crave the in-person events too. And I think, you know, certain platforms have been better than others. A Mighty Blaze is certainly among them in terms of recreating the intimacy that is something that we miss so much from live events.
One of the things I love the best about the Mighty Blaze interviews when I produce them is readers will watch and they just type, literally type a question into Facebook. Like, how are you inspired to write this book? And then as the producer behind the scenes, I just pop that question up on the screen and the author reads it and answers the person's question. And it's like, you can speak directly to the author. I mean, how many opportunities do you get like that?
No, it's so fun, exactly. No, it is. It's a very special, it's a very, you guys are doing good work and that's, you know, why it's one of the platforms that has survived all this time since literally the initial beginning days of the pandemic. I mean, I remember it so vividly. So
here 2 years later,
I know it's really crazy. So, tell me, there's also another, project that you've been involved with that I think is so fascinating and I'm sure people will want to hear more about it, which is Operation Delta Dog. Talk a little bit about your involvement there and how that began.
Yeah, it's almost 10 years old now, which is next year will be our 10th anniversary, which is impossible for me to believe. That got started. I'm the daughter of a veteran. So I kind of grew up on army bases and was familiar with that. And then in 2012, there happened to be a lot of things in the news about veteran suicides that year. I'm not sure why it was in the news so much, but I just kept seeing it over and over.
Yes.
And I just remember thinking, this is awful. Like, these people go to help us and fight for our country. And then they come home and it's so awful what they're dealing with that they're committing suicide.
Yes.
So I started researching just, you know, what was going on there. And it turns out that service dogs can be super helpful with helping with PTSD and brain injury, which are called the invisible disabilities. So I said, oh, well, it's great. I'm like a huge dog lover. So I said, that's great. I'm just going to find a local organization that's doing that. And I'm just going to write a check, make a donation. I couldn't find one. And I'm looking. And I found it on the West Coast and in Texas and, on, you know, far places from us. But it's crazy because we have a lot of veterans around here. And I said, it would really be great if we had an organization around here in New England that was helping veterans by training service dogs. And I entered a pitch contest where you kind of bring a business idea and they give you a microphone in 3 minutes and you pitch your idea basically. So I pitched it and sat down and then to my shock, won the grand prize of $10,000.
That is incredible.
And I'm like, oh, now I really have to do it.
Right. Be careful what you wish for.
So then I went, oh, I guess I have to do this. So at the time I was a stay-at-home mom, and it just took over all of our lives, my whole family's life, for the next wow. 5 years. It's a 24-hour day sort of job to start a nonprofit.
Yeah, of course.
And here we are 10 years later. We've trained more than 50 dogs to help 50 veterans.
Wow.
And they do all kinds of things, from flipping on light switches so the veteran doesn't have to enter a dark room, to waking them from nightmares, and just providing, you know, companionship with helps with the loneliness and all kinds of things like that. So it's been amazing. It's been a great experience.
That's incredible. So can you tell people how they can find the organization and support it?
Thank you. Yes, it's operationdeltadog.org.
That's incredible. Well, I will 100%
share
that.
And we're, of course, on social media too.
Yeah. So tell everyone where they can find out more about you and your books as well. And you mentioned that you might be having some live and online events. So tell us how we can find out more about that.
Yeah, that's all on the website, my author website, which is tmblanchett.com. And Blanchett just has one T on the end.
Perfect. Well, Tricia, thank you so much. It's been wonderful to talk with you. I love, love, love the book. Thank you so much for the sneak peek at this book. And everyone, grab your copy of Herrick's End. You won't want to wait one more minute for that. And we are going to be anxiously awaiting book two. So thank you so much.
Thanks. And congratulations on In Her Defense, too.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Don't forget, everyone, if you love this episode, which of course you did, rate it and review it. You can follow us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and everywhere you listen to your podcasts. Thanks for being here for season two.